This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
And I'm Orion Samuelson saying good morning, Roger. Good morning to all of you across America. And years ago when I joined WGN Radio, we always would say this is WGN Radio serving the nation from Chicago. And I think we still are serving the world now thanks to the new technology. But anyway, good morning to you. It's 7 minutes after 5 o'clock and checking in this morning from our studio in Huntley, Illinois, where right now it's 65 degrees, not bad. And in my rain gauge yesterday, 48 hundredths of an inch, another good half inch of rain, and that's the kind of summer it has been. And crops, corn and soybeans, for the most part, there are always a few exceptions. You can't say totally the crop is perfect, but for the most part, as we've been mentioning this week, the good to excellent condition rating of the corn and soybean crops across the heart of the country, the Midwest, is at the highest percentage level it has ever been. And generally, by the end of July, we have seen those crop condition reports begin to drop as you get various dry spots and various flooding spots and all that. Just hasn't happened this year. And so, barring a weather catastrophe between now and the end of September, middle of October, we're going to harvest a huge crop. Thanks to the hard work of America's farmers that have gone totally unmentioned in the Republican and Democratic conventions. At least I missed it. Maybe a speaker at midnight talked about it, but I never heard the word agriculture mentioned. And as I have been saying for a long time on WGN, no other job will be around if you don't have food to eat. And that comes from the farms and ranches of America and the world, really. So good to have you along this morning at 9 minutes after 5 o'clock. We're in the midst of county fair season. County fairs underway all across the country, and in the heart of the Midwest, we're winding down the Lake County Fair in Grays Lake, Illinois. That will close on Sunday, but then we have fairs like Kankakee and McHenry a lot of them in Wisconsin and Indiana. And again, I'll talk about this a little bit later, but really in the heart of the Midwest, the state fair season gets underway as we move into the month of August. And the first state fairs in the heart of the Midwest will be coming up on August 3rd. We'll make it August 4th. Wisconsin State Fair will open at West Allis. And then on August 5th, the Indiana State Fair will open at Indianapolis. And then on August 11th, the Iowa State Fair at Des Moines. August 11th, the Illinois State Fair at Springfield. One of the big state fairs in the Midwest is the Minnesota State Fair. And that's always over the Labor Day weekend, so that'll open on August 25th. But the Illinois State Fair will be back once again for Agriculture Day. That will be a salute to the farmers of Illinois. And it will conclude in the late afternoon with the auction of the Grand Champions, the Grand Champion Commodities, followed by the Grand Champion Livestock that will be auctioned off at the fair. It's always a big thing at county and state fairs because it gives us, as in adults, and particularly if we have a business we want to promote, an opportunity to promote it in front of a lot of people at the county or state fair livestock auctions, and at the same time provide encouragement for the 4-H and FFA members who have worked long and hard to get ready for the fair. As I said earlier this summer on my Samuelson Says, this is Super Bowl time for the 4-H and FFA kids across the country when they compete in the livestock judging ring and in clothing and so many other projects now being offered by 4-H and FFA. I still maintain those two organizations are the best leadership training programs for young people you'll find anywhere on the planet. So we'll continue to talk about state fairs and county fairs. I want to talk a little bit more about what's happening at the Lake County Fair in Grays Lake today, where you'll have an opportunity to support the 4-H'ers and the FFA members who have been showing livestock at the Lake County Fair. But every Saturday morning, Jim Fazell, and he's our specialist in horticulture here on the Saturday Morning Show, something he's been sharing with us for at least 40 years here on the program. And so we'll be joining Jim to talk about flower gardens in just a couple of minutes when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show. Jim Fazell time here on the Saturday Morning Show. And my golly, Jim, here we are at the end of July. Crop conditions never better in history as far as corn and soybeans. But, well, you are our specialist now in horticulture. And so we're going to take a look at that today. Everything doing well?
Just as well as can be expected. It's the same situation. We've had the temperatures, which are just about right. We've had moisture just about the time it was needed, and things are looking good. We've had a few storms that knocked a few things around in flower gardens and so forth, but other than that, it's been a great season.
So let's talk about the flower garden this week.
You know, we don't do that very often, and we really ought to. One of the things that's always fun is the cut flower garden. A lot of these flowers that we just grow for outdoors and look at them out in our gardens and so forth will do very nicely indoors. And we don't think about that. We see more stuff indoors than we do outdoors most of the year, and we can cut these flowers, bring them in, and thoroughly enjoy them. We can also dry flowers. Cut flowers, you need to cut them when they're fresh for bouquets and arrangements, and this means that they're just right at the peak of opening. You don't want to let them get old before you do that. You want to get them so that you have as much time as possible after you have cut them. You want to pick them early in the day, before the heat of the day, because they'll tend to stay better that way. When you pick them, trim the stems and set these flowers in 100-degree water. Now, one of the things I like to do, especially with things that tend to curl and won't stay straight for you, I roll them up in a sheet of newspaper and put them in this 100-degree water, and then we put them in the refrigerator for about 12 hours. This will cause them to harden off. Then after you've gotten them hardened off, you can bring them out of the refrigerator, recut the stems, and you can set them up in your arrangements or bouquets or however you want to do it. And they'll last usually for several days that way. Sometimes some kinds of flowers will last a lot longer than that. In fact, one of the flowers that has a bad reputation is the cut rose. We have some varieties that do very well if they're taken care of in this manner. Now, one of the things you need to do, too, if you have flowers that don't normally stay very long, you can use preservative in the water. It does two things. First of all, it keeps bacteria from growing in the water, which plugs up the stems. And second of all, it does provide some sugar for the flower itself, and that provides it with energy. Anyway, that's one of the things that the commercial florists do. They use preservatives, and we can tap into that information just as well. Now, with drying flowers, there are a lot of flowers that grow in the garden. In fact, there are a lot of wild flowers out in the wherever that will make excellent dried flowers that can be used for arrangements that will last for months. Thin petal types like hydrangeas or cosmos, things of that kind, you need to keep them or cut them at the peak of perfection and strip off the foliage. And what I like to do is bunch them up loosely and hang them upside down in a warm, dry place. Now, it needs to be warm and dry, not just warm, but dry too, because you're going to try to dry these things. Now, with the fleshy blooms like the roses, we mentioned those before, and zinnias or sunflowers and things like that, again, you need to cut them when they're right at the peak of perfection. And you either need to remove the heads from the stems, or you can wire them with florist's wire, or at least strip the foliage off the stems. Now, if you leave the stems on there, they're going to take longer to dry because the stems keep providing moisture. These get dried in silica sand, which you can get at most hobby shops and many of the places that sell hobby goods, sometimes at the hardware stores and so forth. Silica gel is a material that is dried, and it will dry whatever you put in it. Sand will work well if you dry it off thoroughly and make sure that it's dry. Anyway, those are some things we can do for cut flowers and thoroughly enjoy them. Especially, we like to cut them just before we're going to have a storm so that they don't get knocked down. We bring the ones in that are ready to cut, bring them in, and we enjoy them indoors, even if the ones that are left out in the yard get knocked down. Now, you need to remember, too, there's some other things that are going on in the garden. As far as the flower garden is concerned, it's time to begin dividing some of the perennials. Daylilies, iris, columbine, and so forth need to be divided at this time of year. You want to divide them as soon as they're done flowering, get them back in the ground where you're going to put them the next time and for the next year, and get them started so that they have a good start before winter comes along. Also, if you're interested in it, some of the things like coneflowers, black-eyed Susan, and some of these other perennial-type plants do make a lot of seed. If you're interested in restarting some of these plants from seed, this is the time to collect them. One of the things I like to do, as soon as you see a coneflower or one of those that's beginning to dry up, you know that the seed's going to come out of that. You can put that into a little plastic bag, the flower. Put the bag over the flower so that if the seed begins to fall out, it will fall into the plastic bag and you collect it. Otherwise, it's going to be down on the ground. Now, if you do collect these seeds, you can do two things with them. First of all, you can sow them immediately outdoors. I like to do that in a kind of a nursery bed out in the garden. Just line them up, put a label on them so you know what they are. Or you can keep them indoors and sow them in the indoor flats just like you do the vegetable garden in late winter, early spring, and you'll have plants that can be put out. They're not going to flower the first year if you do that, but they can be put out in the garden and they'll grow for you very nicely that way. Just another reminder, I keep having people that are asking, why don't we get big garlic when we grow garlic? I don't grow a lot of garlic, but I know a lot of people that do because it's a very common herb. A lot of people with the cooking that they do nowadays, it's gourmet cooking, they will use a lot of garlic. The secret to it is to get the biggest plants possible before they start to bulb. And to do that, you can't sow them in spring. You've got to start those things about this time of year. We usually try to start it in August if we're going to grow garlic. You work the soil really well, add fertilizer, usually about 3 pounds of 10, 10, 10 or something like that per 100 square feet because they do take fertility. It's important that you finely cultivate that soil because if you have lumps in the soil, you're not going to have well-shaped bulbs. Plant the toes upright, water them, get out of the way, let them grow. They're going to grow this fall, and they're going to grow again next spring, and in June you're going to see the leaves start to turn yellow. You've got garlic, and you should have great big bulbs.
And then everybody will know you're growing garlic.
Yes, they will.
Well, I'm glad that the gardens are doing about as well as the corn and the soybean crops across the Midwest. So now we move into the critical month of August where a lot of plants will need moisture.
Yeah, they will. And, you know, it's interesting. We actually got a lot of water here about a week ago. We got three storms that came through, and we got nearly 4 inches of water. Incidentally, Jane and I do a lot of walking in the morning. The day after we got a 2.5-inch rain, we were walking over near our home here, and we had to get out of the way because the sprinklers were running.
Oh,
and we see that all the time. You know, it's not necessary to water unless the plants are wilting. Incidentally, right now some plants are wilting because they have too much water. So anyway, if your irrigation system is running when it's raining, you probably need to do something about that. It doesn't help the plants any, and it sure wastes a lot of water.
Good idea, my friend. Thank you for being with us, as always, here on Saturday, and we'll get back in touch with you the first Saturday of August.
Look forward to it.
That's Jim Fazell. He deals with horticulture here on the Saturday Morning Show. It's 25 minutes after 5 o'clock, sun getting ready to rise, and we're on the air today from our studio in Huntley, Illinois in McHenry County, and no fog here at least, and there are some fog warnings out this morning. That happens after we get moisture in the summertime and then heat comes along. It impacts our air Orion flying from time to time in the summer because of the early morning fog. And speaking of that, between now and the 5:30 news, I have to share with you my story of last Sunday. I'm going to talk about it in Samuelson Says as well, but a few other comments I want to make, because many of you know I love airplanes. And so it was my opportunity last Sunday to go to Janesville, Wisconsin, to the airport for their Heavy Bombers Weekend, which runs ahead of the Air Venture Show in Oshkosh, which is the biggest airplane show in the world. A lot of my friends are there for that this week, including Paul Wallen, who has become an author. He has written a book about general aviation and how airplanes play a role in the business of a lot of people. But at Janesville last weekend, they had, and I'll name them all because I'm betting many of you listening today have flown in these for real, the B-29 Super Fortress. Probably not too many of you that flew in that during the war, World War II. The B-17 Flying Fortress, B-25 Mitchell, AC-47 gunship, Grumman C-1A, P-51 Mustang, that's a noisy airplane, C-45 Expediter, the TBM Avenger, the PT-13 Stearman, the AT-6 Texan, the SNJ-5, the PT-26, the KC-135 fuel tanker, and an L-29 jet. They were all on the ground at the airport in Janesville, and I got to take a ride in the B-17 Flying Fortress. That was the workhorse bomber of World War II in the European theater. It's what brought Adolf Hitler and Nazism to their knees. So it really a thrill. And what made it even more exciting was the crew, because Ken and Lorraine Morris, husband and wife, he is a retired Northwest captain. She is an active United captain flying the 777 from Chicago to Rome. They were in the cockpit. She was in the captain's seat, and he was in the co-pilot's seat. And it was so interesting to watch them work together and to do everything you had to do to get these big bombers off the ground in World War II. And along with that, they have two crew chiefs that travel with the B-17, which is titled the Aluminum Overcast. So maybe you have been on the airplane. But Glenn Hill and Don Burbank, a couple of great guys, they were the crew chiefs. And Ken Morris wanted me to note that both of those men are recipients of the Charles Taylor Award, which is a very big deal award for mechanics. So to Glenn and to Don, thank you. And to Ken and Lorraine, the only married couple in the world, both qualified to fly the B-17 Flying Fortress, thank you for the flying thrill of a lifetime. And as I mentioned in my upcoming Samuelson Says, I was looking out the cockpit windows at a landscape of green corn and soybean fields across southern Wisconsin, and I could only imagine what those kids, 19, 20, and 21 in World War II, were imagining as they looked out the windows, saw the flak bursts designed to bring them to the ground, and watched some of their friends go down in flames in B-17s. And well, anyway, we'll talk a little bit more at after the news on Samuelson Says. But thanks to everybody involved in that event, and it was truly a great day for me, one that I really enjoyed. We're at the 5:30 mark here on the Saturday morning show, and this is Chicago's very own WGN Radio. And thank you, Roger. I'm Orion Samuelson here on WGN Radio for the weekly Saturday morning show. We're at 26 minutes before 6 o'clock. And Roger did mention in the news the fact that the president has signed the National Food Labeling Act, which is designed to let people know if there is a GMO in their food. We have been consuming GMOs for 30 years. I have yet to see a death certificate that says died of consuming GMO food, but I understand people wanting to know what is in their food. And there's one group particularly, and I just want to take a moment to share part of the statement that was issued yesterday by Winona Hotter, who is executive director of the Food and Water Watch. And reading her press release, you'd think the world was coming to an end. This is what it said. Today, President Obama signed into law a bill that will prevent states from adding clear, easy-to-read GMO labels to food packages. They call it the Deny Americans the Right to Know the Dark Act. The bill was supported by Senators Pat Roberts and Debbie Stabenow, Democrats and Republicans. The large biotech company Monsanto, we've always got to bring that name into it, and the Grocery Manufacturers Association, a trade group for, quote, big food. She goes on to say this development is a disappointment for voters in Vermont, activists across the country who fought for our right to know what's in our food, and the vast majority of Americans who support GMO labeling. And there are so many people, and this is my comment, so many people in so many parts of the world that all they want to get their hands on is food, something to put in their stomach. But Ms. Hotter goes on to say, despite the hype coming from proponents of the legislation, I guess that's people like me, this is not a GMO labeling bill. Instead, it gives food companies the option to include QR codes, barcodes, or 1-800 numbers on food packages that shoppers must scan with a smartphone in order to access information about possible GMO ingredients. This is not GMO labeling. It's cumbersome and elitist, and above all, a giant hassle. But the important part of this legislation is it will nullify Vermont's GMO labeling law that went into effect on July 1st, and it will do away with the idea that we're going to have 50 different states with their own food labeling rules. It makes it a national rule, and how much more can we do to alert people? My bottom line, finally, is if you don't want GMO in your food, go to the organic food store, and then you won't have to worry about the label. All right, end of that editorial, and let's go on now to Samuelson Says, sponsored by Wink Products Company, makers of quality specialty cleaning products since 1947. I'm Orion Samuelson, and this week sharing with you the story of the greatest generation. Now, I know you love your glass ceramic cooktop, except when it's time to clean it. So let me tell you about one product that will leave your cooktop sparkling clean. It's Wink Glass Ceramic Cooktop Cleaner. It's strong enough to remove those greasy, grungy spots and yet gentle enough for smooth top ranges. It cleans, it polishes, it conditions smooth top ranges, and special conditioners leave a protective coating which helps prevent scratches. That's Wink Cooktop Cleaner. You can learn more about that and all of the other Wink products at wink.com. That's WHINK.com. And now Samuelson Says. In case you're not aware of it by now, I love airplanes. Ever since I took my first ride as a youngster in a Piper Cub at the Vernon County Fair in Wisconsin, fell in love with airplanes and have been fortunate enough during my lifetime to fly countless airplanes around the world commercially, but also to fly in general aviation planes, single and twin engines, and since 1984 have been fortunate enough to own a single-engine Cessna 210 that has saved me countless hours going to farm shows, county and state fairs, and speaking engagements across the Midwest. So why am I talking about this? What does this have to do with agriculture? Well, I have to tell you. A few days ago, I took the greatest plane ride I've ever taken. I flew in the cockpit of a B-17 Flying Fortress over Janesville, Wisconsin, before the big airplane show started in Oshkosh. And I can see now why kids flew the airplane in the European War, because you had to be pretty small to get into the turrets and the cockpit of this airplane. And as a 228-pounder, I struggled to get all the way into the cockpit, but I made it. And as the plane took off with those four powerful engines roaring, you couldn't talk to anybody because of the noise. But looking out the window once we reached cruising altitude, and the flight lasted about 30 minutes, I could only imagine why the greatest generation did what it did against the hazards of this job. I could imagine these young pilots and crew members looking out the window at bursts of flak over Europe, watching other planes in their squadron going down in flames, and wondering if they would get back to the airbase in England. What a generation Tom Brokaw wrote about. Now the connection to agriculture. My guess is that a lot of those pilots and crew members came from farms and ranches across the U.S. My guess is some of you listening today maybe flew in the Flying Fortress during the war, the Second War. We salute the greatest generation. My thoughts on Samuelson Says. A presentation of Tribune Radio Networks. It's 19 minutes before 6 o'clock here on the Saturday morning show. Max Armstrong standing by with a guest, as always, on Saturday morning to talk about the wild world of markets, whether it's Wall Street or agriculture. You'll hear from Max when we continue here on the Saturday morning show.
In the studio here with us this weekend is Brian Splitt from Allendale Incorporated. I've been out around farmers quite a bit in recent days, Brian, and I guess the telling thing in those anecdotal reports coming in to me from those growers, there were very few complaints about the way the crops look right now.
Yeah, we are hearing definitely the same thing, and I think the general perception right now, especially in both Iowa and Illinois, is that we do have the potential to have record crops this year. And so we're at the stage of the downtrend in the market right now where we're going to try and price in just how big this crop is.
Still, there could be some lingering concern about heat and dryness toward the tail end of the season, and especially, I guess, for some of the soybeans.
Right. Soybeans are made in August, and we're going to be watching the weather still very closely for soybean production. And we need both adequate moisture and reasonable temperatures. So as we look out to the 11 to 15 day, it does appear that we might be seeing some dryness develop. And that's something that the trade is going to be very mindful of in the weeks coming up.
Someone was pointing out the other day, one of the longer range forecasters, looking at the possibility for some tropical moisture to develop on into August. Historically, as we see those kinds of things, they've been more beneficial than harmful, haven't they, in terms of the moisture that they shove up into, for example, double crop soybeans, while they wipe out some crops maybe closer to the delta or down into that Gulf area. Quite often they do help crops in other regions.
Right, and I think the way that the trade may perceive that is that there could be, like you had said, some of the crops could get wiped out if there are rather extreme totals of precip. But in general, if we do see moisture throughout the Corn Belt, the larger picture perception is that is going to be very beneficial for yield as a whole.
Let's talk crop tours for just a moment. After the release of the USDA numbers in a few days especially, we'll be watching for the private crop tours. And there was a wheat tour this week we noted in North Dakota, and one route showed the average wheat yield 10 bushels better than the year before. Another one showed hardly a bushel better than the year before. One noted crop analyst whose commentary I read earlier this week pointed out that the crop tours don't often accurately survey what is happening in the fringe areas of the major corn and soybean production. He said, in the interest of time and in the interest of money, they go right through the heart of the major producing areas. But it was his opinion that you really need to watch a little closer the Dakotas, for example, this year, especially noting how much production has moved up into that region. And he was offering the opinion that they might not adequately survey that area.
Well, right, and you can't go everywhere in the time allotted to do the crop tours. And so, like you said, in the interest of time, you're going to go where there is the most production. And it makes sense to do that because the higher producing areas are going to have a bigger effect on the overall national averages. But, you know, we have to keep an eye on the fringe areas, and that could be the difference at the end of the day between this market needing to price in, you know, 172, 173 bushels per acre to maybe 169 to 170 because of some of these fringe areas. So, you know, every spot counts, and, you know, only until we really get into the January final production numbers will we truly know where this crop lies.
And those so-called fringe areas are actually some of the areas where there have been crop problems this year. As he was pointing out, for example, Kansas, Ohio, the Dakotas, the extreme southern states.
Right. And, you know, I just got back from Ohio this past Sunday, and I was out there for a buddy's wedding. And the general sense that I got out there was that, yeah, we've got some problems. And as a lot of the moisture that we've been seeing move through the Corn Belt has moved through Iowa and into Illinois, as it's gone through Indiana and into Ohio, they've seemed to continue to break up. And that's been one of the trends that we've seen this year. So we will continue to see some stress in the Ohio crop. And that'll be an area of concern if you get into the far western Corn Belt where there's been some rather extreme temperatures. And we had some rather oppressive heat overall this past, week to 10 days ago. But, man, some of the heat that we saw in the western Corn Belt was just really extreme. So there's going to be some concerns out there as well.
The chain of storms that came along through the middle part of July and in the recent days had some analysts, I think, ratcheting up their corn yield number. I know, for example, one who said, you know, he was going to add 2 bushels on after keeping his estimate pretty much unchanged. Where are you on the corn estimate? What are you thinking we're looking at this time? What do you think the market is trading, Brian?
Well, I don't know that I really think anything personally for yield. I think it's going to be a very big crop. I do think that the trade right now is thinking that we are most likely somewhere between that 171 yield that we had in 2014 to I think as high as 173. And I think that seems to be the sweet spot right now for what the potential for this crop could be. Now, the USDA, after the 2012 drought, did revise their method of how they calculate their yield potential for the report. And so in August, we're going to get the next WASDE report. And I think, you know, at the very least, we do have to expect that the USDA is going to address the adequate precip that we've had. And for the most part, we have not had extensively extreme heat. We have had our patches of very high temperatures, but not long enough stretches to really sway the yield number substantially lower. So I think we've got the potential to see possibly a record crop this year as far as a yield perspective. And with the acres that we planted, there are grumblings of potentially a 15 billion bushel corn crop this year.
Well, that begs the question, how will the usage be and how is it now? What are we seeing with this price break that has taken place in the recent days?
Well, we did see a little bit of export business in corn this week, and we saw a little bit of export business on soybeans this week as well at some lower prices. But we have to see that. If you're not going to see solid demand at lower levels, then that's going to be a concern. So while this market is sub 350 for corn, while we're sub $10 for soybeans, we do want to see continued interest on the export side of things. You know, ethanol has been a bright spot really this whole past marketing year. So, you know, we want to see that continue, and it looks like margins are still positive and things look good there. So with the downturn in the grain prices recently, unfortunately, we have seen energy prices come down with that. So it'd be nice to see the crude oil and the products get a little bit of a bump back up while the grain prices are at these levels to encourage maybe a little bit of extra demand on that front.
You know, I did see one analyst this week comment on the fact that it appeared in those midweek energy numbers reported that the gasoline consumption is going to be greater or is running at a greater pace than had been expected. And that certainly would be, I guess, a little bit friendly, wouldn't it, given the fact that We do blend so much ethanol, 10% in the fuel supply in the country.
Right. Anytime that we can see solid energy demand, I think that just through, you know, the different levels of energy usage is good for ethanol use. And so one of the things that I think we've seen happen over the last several months is we saw what was at least a perceived glut in crude oil, and that has transitioned to a lot of the product available. So with the good weather that we've seen this summer, and hopefully that has encouraged a lot of travel, and we've seen some of the product usage above previous year's averages. And if that's the case, that it's only going to help our ethanol demand.
I see by the pin on your lapel, you are a proud Marine. And thank you for your service to our country, Brian.
Thank you for that, Max. I appreciate it.
Appreciate your visit as always. Brian Splitt, Allendale Incorporated.
Repeat to me everything you just heard, will you please? Because I couldn't catch it. 5 minutes before 6 o'clock news time here on the Saturday morning show, Max was talking about Farm Progress Show coming up on August 30, 31, and September 1 in Boone, Iowa. Max and I, every day at noon, will be appearing at the ADM tent, and it's air-conditioned, so if it's a hot time at the Farm Progress Show, come on in at noon and join us. We'll have some very interesting guests, and we'll have music by the back page as well. And in answer to a couple of emails, corn harvest every day from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., and then the demonstration of tillage tools and other special machines will take place every day from 2 to 3 p.m. I want to go back to the Lake County Fair in Grays Lake winding up tomorrow evening. As a matter of fact, just about every county fair ends at the last session with a demolition derby. And they'll do the same thing at the Lake County Fair on Sunday at 1 o'clock, but they have a second night of destruction. They had that last night, so two demolition-type derbies at the Lake County Fair. But today, it's the agricultural kids in the spotlight, 2 o'clock this afternoon, the auction of Grand Champion Livestock at the Lake County Fair in Grays Lake. Bring your credit card, bring your checkbook, bring your cash, and support 4-H and FFA kids. As we look ahead to next week, more county fairs on the schedule, but we get underway with probably the first major outdoor farm show of the season, Farm Fest in Minnesota. It's been going on for years, and it will take place next Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday on the Farm Fest grounds at Redwood Falls, Minnesota. With weather cooperating, we'll fly Air Orion up there on Wednesday and join our friend, fellow farm broadcaster Lynn Kettleson on stage at noon to talk markets and politics. That one could be kind of interesting. But Farm Fest, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday at Redwood Falls, Minnesota. So there is a lot going on, and as I said earlier, state fairs in the Midwest getting underway next week with the opening of the Wisconsin State Fair and the Indiana State Fair. A lot to do. It's a great time of the year because in addition to county and state fairs, a lot of rural communities with all volunteer help like to put together promotions of crops and products that they produce in their area. It all started back in the first weekend of June, Dairy Month, with Harvard Milk Days up at Harvard, Illinois. And there'll be all sorts of food festivals in rural communities that will be taking place from now until the end of the growing season. And we do hope that you're going to be able to attend a county fair, a state fair, and look for us because Max and I will be there. And ADM tent from noon till 1 o'clock. Well, actually, starting at 11:45 Tuesday and Wednesday, because they're going to have a lot of lieutenant governors and agricultural directors from states around the nation. And they'll be joining us on stage on August 30, 31, September 1. And finally, a good morning. Gloria and I went to, I love this place, Jameson's at Sun City Huntley last night. And several people came up to say, hey, my folks listen to you, I listen to you, and thank you for being part of our audience here on WGN Radio Chicago. Thank you for joining us here on the Saturday Morning Show, along with Max Armstrong. I'm Orion Samuelson. Always a pleasure to be with you every week and to have Jim Fazell and some other special guests as well. We're at the 6 o'clock mark on this Saturday morning, and this is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on The Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.